Hello, my name is Vicky Gay and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In 2008, food and oil prices spiked, causing damages to world trade and affecting the lives of millions of people around the world. Earlier this year, food prices began to climb again, sparking fears that we were heading towards a crisis similar to that of 2008. However, the IMF's Samia Beda-Strom explains that this is not the case. In this podcast, she explains why the spikes in food and fuel prices are not as severe as that of 2008.
In 2007 and 8, the food crisis was exacerbated by many forms of export restrictions by major food exporters. But we haven't seen these policies in 2012. Also, in the past crisis, all the four major crops, corn, wheat, rice and soybeans, were affected by the price spike. But this time round, rice prices have remained relatively stable and wheat prices increased only recently. Another issue is energy prices. Energy prices played a big role in the last crisis when they shot up alongside food prices. This time round, energy prices declined in the first half of the year, and they've only recently gone back up to those highs. A final issue is countries aren't overheating right now because of weak economic growth, and this has basically contained it.
You were talking about prices that had gone up and others that had not. So how have all these oil and food prices evolved since the crisis of 2008?
In the IMF, we have a food index and we track 22 prices of the most commonly international traded agricultural food items. It's increased 15% during the past 8 months of this year, whereas in the past crisis, food prices shot up 23%. So you can see already it's a different magnitude. For oil, the price increase in the past crisis was 36%. This time round, although prices fell after the 2008 crisis, they went back up and we've got used to higher prices this time around.
So what are the reasons for the sharp increase in prices this year, especially for the basic crops?
Well, basically, there are three reasons. The first one is there have been some world supply disruptions. The second is due to robust demand. And the third is because buffers are low. On the supply side, the price spikes were driven by concerns of weather-related supply shocks. For example, the worst drought in the US over half of a century. And earlier in the year, there was the La Nina weather pattern that led to drought in South America. It hurt corn and soy crops in Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay. Wheat crops are also estimated to have been downgraded in basically the Black Sea region, which is Kazakhstan, Russia, and Ukraine. So that's on the supply side. On the other hand, on the demand side, food demand has remained really strong despite weakening economic activity. And that comes mainly from emerging and developing countries, and with China being the single largest driver in the market. And finally, while there's been a significant improvement since the past food crisis in terms of food buffers, we're still below the long-term averages. And therefore, we're leaving the global food market vulnerable to supply setbacks.
What impact does food and oil prices volatility have on countries, especially middle and low-income countries?
There are three main effects of food and oil price volatility, from a macroeconomic perspective, that is. The first is on the trade balance. The IMF basically estimates that about 15 to 20% of a price increase for some of these key crops would deteriorate the trade balance of vulnerable regions. The effect on the trade balance is somewhat ambiguous. It depends if you're a net importer or a net exporter. But there is another factor that hurts the terms of trade, and that's the fall in mineral prices because of weak economic activity and still high energy costs because of geopolitical risks. These are all negative terms of trade on importers and will hurt their trade balance. There's also an impact on inflation. Rising food prices translate into higher headline inflation, which erodes consumers' purchasing power, basically. And good news is that these temporary supply shocks don't typically have a persistent impact on inflation. And then finally, there's a fiscal impact. Basically, the past crisis showed that responding to food price pressures through subsidies and removing certain taxes has an impact on GDP. It's estimated to be about 1% of GDP for sub-Saharan Africa. This time, since it's concentrated in a few crops, it should be smaller.
Traditionally, drought regions such as, you know, the Horn of Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa in general are particularly vulnerable to such hikes. Is it still very much the same, or are there other countries or regions at the moment that are also very vulnerable to these hikes?
The current food spike is less severe than the 2007 and 8 crisis because it hasn't affected all key crops uniformly. And it hasn't been aggravated by trade restrictions and very high energy input costs. However, there are regions that are vulnerable, of course, and these are regions particularly who import corn, soybeans and wheat. We know that low-income countries in particular spend somewhere between 30 to 50% on their income on food. So reflecting these issues, there are a few vulnerable countries in Africa, for example, Lesotho, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Malawi and Zimbabwe, and also some in Central America, some in the Caribbean, the Middle East and the Pacific Island countries.
What can these countries do to protect themselves and, most importantly, their populations from these hiking prices?
Well, in terms of food, in the short term, we recommend countries effectively scale up their safety nets to the poor and accommodate spikes in headline inflation. There are two types of inflation, core and headline. Core is inflation from a consumption basket that is not affected by volatile prices such as food and fuel. In headline inflation, you include everything in the consumption basket, and that could be volatile. So what we say basically is allow headline inflation to be volatile. We're asking central banks to do this since we expect this shock not to be persistent, and allow the exchange rate to move so that it can absorb the shock and use fiscal space, if available, to reduce taxes on food and, if needed, draw on external finance to support the balance of payments and international reserves. But also food producers, on the other hand, should bolster agricultural investment and avoid export restrictions. Now, on oil, there are different issues. For oil, demand needs to become more responsive to prices. And by that, I mean policies could encourage higher fuel taxes in some advanced countries, for example, and targeted cash transfers in place of fuel subsidies in developing countries. In the more longer term, increased investment in the oil sector is also crucial to oil price stability because capacity has actually only risen modestly despite these high oil prices we've been seeing. And over the even longer term, policies should aim to transition away from crude oil to other sources of energy such as natural gas and renewables.
Finally, is it possible at all to estimate what food and oil prices will be in the next few years to sort of prepare ourselves for another potential hike?
I'm afraid not. At the IMF, we rely on future markets and we don't forecast commodity prices. Futures are markets that aim to deliver oil in the future at a price agreed today. So they're future contracts. Now, futures tend to perform quite well for well-traded commodities such as oil. And future markets at the moment indicate that prices are expected to moderate towards the end of 2013. So what we're saying is risks are tilted to the upside.
This was Samia Beda-Strom speaking on the topic of food and fuel prices volatility. And to hear more podcasts, log on to www.imf.org/podcasts.